want to go live to Poland and talk to our friend Mike Krupka, who is live with us, fresh off a soccer match last night, or as he called it, a derby. I've never heard a soccer match called a derby. Mike, welcome back. How are you, buddy?
Good, I'm good. Yourself?
I am well. Why'd you call it a derby?
Well, a derby is when two teams from the same city play a match. So in Europe, obviously, we're big fans of football, real football, not right. American football.
Yeah, the real, right, not the compromise, yeah, right.
See, if I was to go back to the States right now, I'd suck up to you guys and say, you know, American football is real football. But since I'm across the pond, I can actually say what real football is, make that distinction. But yeah, we had a big football game yesterday in the Champions League. It was two teams from Milano. They were playing AC Milan and Inter. And Inter wiped the floor with Milan 2-0, but they still have a game next week, so they might still advance to the final of the Champions League, which is the most professional, the most prestigious playoffs of soccer/football in the world. And they take place in Europe every year. So I said it was Italian night, got out the Sicilian Merlot and made some pasta, and forget about it. We took care of business.
I count the positive and, forget about it. Mm-hmm. I like that. So you're Italian Polish?
Well, due to my great knowledge of Martin Scorsese films and gangsterabilia in general, I can say in spirit I'm a little bit Italian, but 100% Polish ethnically and genetically. So,
okay. What is your gangsterophobia? Is that what you call it?
Gangsterophilia.
Gangsterophilia. Yes, yeah. I have a great collection of gangsterophilia. I've seen the greatest gangsterophilia piece that there is, because I've been to Francis Ford Coppola's winery in Napa Valley, and there are all the accoutrements that he wanted from the sets of The Godfather. But his prized possession and the one he puts on the second floor so no one can get to it and spill wine on it and do whatever else to it is he actually has a Tucker car.
Oh, nice. I thought he had a horse's head, but almost.
No, he probably does have a horse's head. But he actually has the Tucker car from the Tucker movie, The Tucker. He didn't come the day I was there. He didn't come out. He wasn't there. His wife was there, though. And she was very nice. In any event, let's talk about what's going on in Poland. True or false, Gonzalo Lira, the famed, what is he? He's American, but he is Peru.
Chilean
journalist. You know, people know him as Mr. Business or Mr. Fix It or something like that. I didn't know the guy until the war in Ukraine broke out. But last year, I want to say it was in May of last year, he kind of disappeared. We thought, you know, that he had been taken out by Ukrainian forces. You were reporting the other day that he was visited by the same special forces, or was he arrested?
Yeah, actually, they taped it this time. Gonzalo has been doing reporting. His videos can be viewed on YouTube. He's based in the city of Kharkov, which is still in Ukrainian hands. And he's been reporting from his apartment, doing interviews, his famous roundtables, which you can find on YouTube, talking with a lot of people who have sensible things to say on the Ukrainian conflict, and even people from the other side of the aisle. Gonzalo liked to do debates. They would run sometimes for like around 2 hours. So a lot of the same people that I have on my podcast, Votum TV, like Larry Johnson, for example, would be on Gonzalo's show. And a few days ago, he had basically a SWAT team of the SBU. The SBU is the security service of the Ukraine, show up at his door. I think it might have been very early in the morning, because Gonzalo looked like he literally just jumped out of his bed, and he was kind of surprised by the visit. So they took him in. From what I've heard, apparently they're trying to pin him with charges that he's spreading enemy Russian propaganda, that apparently he has contacts with some Russian sources and networks that are providing him with the information he's providing on his channel. So that's a very broad piece of information that I have on. I don't know about the details, but I think the thing that's protecting him in essence is not only the fact that he's a Chilean background, but he holds an American passport. So I think that might be the one thing that is saving his life right now. He's in custody, so I think he has a lawyer working on his case. So at least we know that he's being treated properly. However, it's Ukraine. There are known, you know, situations and cases where people just disappear, even from the hands of special services or police. So we're all praying, no matter what you think of the conflict, for Gonzalo Lira's expedient release. And hopefully he gets back to doing his show, because nobody should be treated the way he is treated, just for speaking his mind, which is obviously not the mind of the Kiev regime.
You know, he's a very interesting character, too. And when you say speaks his mind, you know, the way he kind of speaks his mind is kind of crude. And he doesn't really care. He doesn't dress up for the camera or anything. He just Gonzalo. He shows up and he goes, you know what? This morning, I really don't want to do a report. I really want to go back to bed and be with my wife. But that'll have to wait.
And his famous smoking of cigarettes while recording, which I'm kind of fond of. My wife is home today, so I can't open up a cigar. But you know what I mean. He's a man's man, basically. But the fact that he's doing a lot of great reporting and open up a lot of eyes, kudos to him. And I hope he gets back to doing that soon.
Mike, you do a lot of great reporting, and you do a podcast you mentioned, and I'm going to give you a chance to plug it in just a moment, and let's talk a little bit about that and how it's going. But I want to ask you, on your show or on a show that you monitor, you see men like General, like Scott Ritter, and there's I can't remember the General McNamara. There are
Colonel McGregor.
Okay,
Colonel Douglas McGregor.
Douglas McGregor. These guys have been pretty solid since the start of this, and what they have been saying since this began was that the Ukrainians don't have a prayer. It doesn't matter if we arm the Ukrainians with $300 billion worth of armaments. The Russians are in this for life. To them, this is life or death. They lose, and then they think they lose their culture, they lose their status in the world. They think that also, and this is true, they will actually have failed to liberate people that are Russians. The people that are in the Donetsk, the Luhansk, and in Crimea, these are historically Russians. They're not Ukrainians. And this is why, you know, we're not going to revisit the history of the whole thing. But what are those guys saying now? Because the last, it's still difficult to get reporting. Here we are, 15 months in now. There's not much being said. The last thing that I saw was Donald Trump saying that tens of thousands of Ukrainian boys, young men, are being sacrificed in Biden and the New World Order's war for a war that the Russians aren't going to lose, Joe. They're not going to lose. The sacrifice of young Ukrainian men is an international scandal. Is it still going on? And does there appear to be any end in sight?
Well, everything that people like Douglas McGregor or Larry C. Johnson or everybody that I've had on my podcast, Votum TV, which I encourage everyone to visit on YouTube, on our channel. We're still sort of working things ground up, but we're doing interviews constantly. So give us a sub. Everything that the guests that I've had on my show, and Judge Napolitano, for example, on his Judging Freedom show, another excellent podcast you should visit, has come to fruition. And just to prove it to you, the Washington Post reported on May 6th in an article entitled "Senior Ukrainian Officials Fear Counterattack May Not Live Up to Hype." So all the weapons that are being sent to Ukraine really won't make a difference in the long run. I mean, the Ukrainians might push a few kilometers into the Russian lines, and the Russians have three fortified lines in the Donbas, which are practically unbreakable, at least not in their totality. You can break one, but it'll be very hard to break two, and practically impossible to break the line number three. But I want to quote what the Ukrainian defense minister said in this article, talking to the Washington Post about the so-called upcoming spring offensive, which we're hearing so much about. It's almost like a blockbuster movie by now, coming soon, the great Ukrainian offensive. But we're not seeing it. Well, Reznikov, who is the Ukrainian defense minister, this is a quote from the article, said this: "Most people are waiting for something big, which can lead to emotional disappointment. My Western partners have told me that now they need the next example of success, because we need to show it to our peoples. But I can't tell you what the scale of that success will be. 10 kilometers, 30 kilometers, 100 kilometers, 200 kilometers. Ideally, the offensive should cut the rear chains of the Russian troops and reduce their offensive capabilities." Now, end quote. Now, obviously, none of that's going to happen. I mean, they might break, in my opinion, you know, 20, 30 kilometers. But if they think they're going to get anywhere near Crimea, they're living in total fantasy land. Another interesting development, which basically happened at the same time, which made headlines, this was actually the day after on May 7th, was This is a headline from RT. Kissinger makes Ukraine peace prediction. With China involved, serious negotiations could begin by the end of the year, the elder statesman said. And this was followed by a report in the Wall Street Journal titled U.S. and Allies Look at Potential China Role in Ending Ukraine Game. In other words, the war is slowly coming to an end, very slowly. There's still a lot of bloodshed probably to happen, unfortunately, but we're seeing the contours of things to come. And in my opinion, what Kissinger is proposing here, i.e. China entering as a big diplomatic mediator and telling Zelensky, hey, listen, this is your last chance. Either you agree to a peace deal and keeping Odessa and giving away what the Russians want and no NATO entrance, and you get to keep your life, by the way, or you can already get on the plane and, you know, escape to Miami. You're going to lose Odessa, and the Russians are coming in hard. Plus, one of the things that the Chinese are probably dangling in front of Zelensky's eyes is the fact that if, should they agree to a peace deal, the Chinese will probably come in with a massive redevelopment and building project that'll obviously elevate a lot of the problems that Ukraine is experiencing due to their war. And in essence, will cut off the West from Ukraine in a big way, because when the Chinese come in with infrastructure projects, they come in hard. So I think a lot of what we're seeing right now are the contours of a peace deal. The West has finally realized that no matter how many weapons they pump into Ukraine, they will never outmatch Russia, especially in the 155 millimeter ammunition department. That's just not going to happen. They can't equal them, not in the time that Ukraine would need to actually break Russia's back in the Donbass, let alone take over the Crimea or, you know, enter Moscow, as some loons are suggesting. So, as I said, we're seeing things change. The counteroffensive, in my opinion, is being used as a sort of excuse, because as that Western politician that told the Ukrainian minister said, if you guys don't show us results, I mean, this is the last straw. We really have to end this because we're feeling the heat of public opinion on our backs.
Well, you can take it to the bank here in the United States. They don't have any howitzer shells. We had to borrow howitzer shells from the South Koreans, because yeah. Biden foolishly, in his nitwit army, the defense secretary, sent them all to Ukraine, where they have been lobbying them at the Russians and probably not doing the kind of damage that we are being told that they can do. Here's the other part of this, though, about what's going on in Ukraine. Have the areas that we call the Donbass. So this would be, I think you have to add Crimea to this, but you have Donetsk, you have Luhansk, and you have how do you pronounce it?
Zaporizhia.
Zaporizhia. Those are the four main ones, right? And now, are they liberated? Or are they Russian now? Say the war ended today and no one moved. Would those territories that voted to join the Russian Federation last year, would they be able to do so? And is there still fighting going on?
No, according to the voting that took place, the Russians would still need to go a little bit west, so to say. Plus, don't forget what Vladimir Putin said during his speech on the State of the Union. I think this was from February or March. I think it was March. Said that we cannot be in a position where the enemy is within firing range of any of our cities. Now, with the equipment being provided to Ukraine right now, in order to not fire upon, for example, Melitopol or Donetsk or Lugansk, you're going to have to push the enemy back at least 150 kilometers west. So that, I think, is the crucial endgame right now, because I think Putin is coming to the realization that it's very hard. You can't negotiate with anyone in Kiev. I mean, the stunt that they pulled last week with sending the drone to the Kremlin just a few days before the Victory Day parade, which took place on May 9th, I think showed to Putin that there really isn't any serious negotiating partner in Kiev right now. And the only way to do to complete the special military operation is either by liquidating the governing elite in Kiev, or banishing them from the country and finding some suitable people that can take the reins of power in a pro-Russian direction after the special military operation would come to a conclusion. So I think that's the outlook right now in the Kremlin.
Well, I was going to ask you, from your sources and what you're seeing in Poland, Mike Krupa is live from Poland with us here on our Dude Maker on the StreamYard hotline. Was the drone a real deal? I mean, it looked to us, we watched it. You see the video and you go like, really? That's what you just shot at the Kremlin? You just did that? Because I couldn't tell. It obviously failed if it was. And of course, the Ukrainians came out and denied it immediately. Are you saying that actually was an attempt to the drone strike the Kremlin?
In my opinion, I don't think it was an attempt on Putin's life, because the famous recording was of the drone hitting the dome of the Senate, actually.
Right. Okay.
Now, Vladimir Putin doesn't sleep in the Senate. He has his own private residence. So I think it was more of a show of force, in the sense that the Ukrainians, in their desperation, trying to send a signal to Putin that, and oh, by the way, we can get you right in the heart of your government. So I think that was the point of this entire stunt. Now, obviously, the Ukrainians are denying this, which is hilarious, if you consider that a Ukrainian oligarch, just a few days before the attack, actually began raising money to buy a drone to hit the Kremlin directly. And the Ukrainian Postal Service, I think it was on the evening of the attack on the Kremlin, they actually published postage stamps with the drone hitting the Kremlin, but they're saying they have nothing to do with it. So why are you celebrating it? Now, obviously, they wanted to do it, but I don't think the intention was to kill Putin. I think it was just a big middle finger to the Russians, but a profound middle finger, because obviously this is the Kremlin after all. I mean, you can imagine what would happen if I don't know, you can compare it to a drone hitting the White House lawn, for example. I mean, you'd have seven countries liberated in the Middle East in a matter of 10 minutes and, you know, democracy floundering and so on. So I think Putin's a cool character. He knows where this is going, and he will not allow the Ukrainians to force upon him moves that are the result of provocations, because if he's unbalanced in that way, then the war is not going according to the Russian plan, but is dictated by the Ukrainians all of a sudden. I don't think Putin is going to allow it, and I think he's cognizant of that.
Well, if anyone has been stable during this whole thing, it has been Putin. And if anyone has issued any kind of restraint, it has certainly been Putin and the Russians. But you still have this TV actor clown, Zelensky, running the show. I'm just wondering, when people in the West come to the realization, dude, this guy isn't even approaching Saddam. You know, they left Saddam there for 13, 14, 15 years because he was useful, or 23 years because he was useful. They left Gaddafi there in Libya because he was useful. He was General Muammar Gaddafi. He was an actual general. He was General Saddam Hussein because he was an actual general. This Zelensky character didn't even play a general. He played a bad comedic president on a TV show. You know, and every time he appears, he just appears to me. It's almost like it's a caricature of what you would expect this guy to be. Are the people in Poland, do they recognize this? That's one question. And secondly, the people in Poland, you obviously live there, are they still all thrown in and down with supporting the Ukrainians at the expense of the Polish people themselves?
Well, it's interesting that you ask, Mike, because there was a report that was published a few days ago. I read about it yesterday, the Polish edition of Business Insider, whereby it clearly shows that whereas at the beginning of the war, 80% of the Polish public believed that the Ukrainian refugees are, in essence, in need of help, and they need to be helped. Right now, the number has dropped to 50%. So you can see the enthusiasm going out the window very quickly. I get the sense from the people that I talk to, from my neighbors, from my friends, not even of a conservative bent, so to say, but just regular type folk, who are getting tired, I think, of two things. Of the fact that this war is taking a toll on the economy. I mean, we have a very high inflation rate in Poland. I think it's the highest in Europe right now, around 20%, I think. And the fact that we're being swamped with Ukrainians and nobody voted for this, not to mention the fact that in April, the government allowed the Ukrainians who are already in Poland to remain for another, to prolong their stay in Poland. And after 3 years, they will be allowed to apply for citizenship, which will bring in a huge minority into Poland and change the ethnic composition of our country. And as I said, nobody voted for this. We're being ruled by a so-called conservative and nationalist government that really doesn't seem to care. Actually, it applauds this demographic change, which would seem to change Poland and is already changing Poland into a binational entity along the lines of something very liberal, something very multicultural, and something definitely very less Polish than we are right now.
That's a shame. Mike Krupa is on our Dude Maker hotline on the StreamYard here on the Mike Church Show on the Crusade Channel, live talk radio and live talk video the way it should be. All right, final question, because I said 10 minutes and here you are for half an hour now. Let's get back to your leftover Italian. Your leftover is...
I still have some. I'll send you the pics later.
Okay, all right. I want to ask you about what you may or may not know. There's a report that has come out of the United States House of Representatives, as I call it here, that shows that Joe Biden, the regime leader, did in fact receive money and funds from the Chinese. Now, the committee hasn't even gotten around. I don't know what they've investigated, what they're going to find out from the bank records of what the Bidens' dealings and the Archers and the Romneys and the Carries and all the rest of them, of what their dealings were in Ukraine, which is why the war is still going on here, because they have such a fleece job going. It's so good for so many Democrats' business. And I don't know if you know this, but I was the English voice. I provided the English voice for the 2019-2020 series by award-winning French journalist Olivier Barrière. I was the English voice of the for the parts that were that they wanted translated into English. I voiced them, so I'm very familiar with the series Ukraine Gate. And in the Ukraine Gate, you know, I learned the names. I've forgotten most of them, but the one that I do is Kolomoisky. So I learned the names of the Ukrainian oligarchs. To your knowledge, is the oligarchy still intact? Is it still fleecing the Ukrainian people by offshoring, if you will, the purchase of the resources so that Ukrainian taxes aren't paid on? Because that was the whole scam. That's why Devin Archer and Hunter Biden, crackhead Hunter Biden, were being paid, was because it was a scheme to deprive the people of Ukraine of the resources being sold in Ukraine and being taxed as they should be. Instead, you had the purchase take place outside of Ukraine, and then the taxes don't apply, and then the money ultimately is laundered back to Burisma, and he pays $60,000 a month to Biden. Is the oligarchy still intact, and is it still fleecing, to your knowledge, or what can you tell me about this is a huge problem in Ukraine. It's the most corrupt place in the world, second only to this one. Is the oligarchy still intact?
You can bet they're intact now. Many of them, especially from Eastern Ukraine, they've either transferred to Western Ukraine. Some of them have moved to Western Europe. Some of them are in Poland. If you look at the license plates, for example, in Warsaw, the type of cars that are driving around with the Ukrainian flag and the letters UI, say, well, it's a very poor refugee population we got here, you know, Mercedes, Ferrari. So you're asking yourself, where did they get these cars all of a sudden? So these are not poor refugees. A lot of these, I would say, maybe oligarchs of a middle level have escaped to Poland. I think the big honchos are still in Ukraine. It's a question. I don't know, for example, where Kolomoisky is. That is an interesting question. But going back to your to whether the fleecing is still happening, I think right now they got a big bonanza going, because if you consider the amount of the billions that have been poured into Ukraine, not to mention the weaponry that's already being found on the black market among mafiosos, among terrorists, and so on. Some people are making a hell of a lot of money, and I think we're seeing a cross-section of sort of civilian oligarchs and their agents in the Ukrainian army, which are you know, selling off food, selling off weapons, laundering money. In my opinion, it's just gotten worse. Now, if we are to believe Cy Hirsch's reporting that in December, Will Burns went to Kiev, Will Burns, the director of the CIA, and told Zelensky straight up, here's a list of generals that are corrupt. You have to get rid of these guys because this is getting out of hand. Well, I think that's only the tip of the iceberg. So I think the situation has only multiplied, is getting worse, and the Ukrainian people are getting nothing for it.
All right, Mike, tell us about your podcast. Where can people find it? What's the YouTube channel address?
It's Votum TV, VOTUM TV. We do fairly regular interviews. Tonight, for example, at, I know it's Seattle time, at 11 a.m. Seattle time, so you could calculate the times in the rest of the country. We're going to be hosting Dr. Gordon Hahn from the Russolog blog, and Andrei Martyanov, the great blogger at Reminiscence of the Future. We're going to be discussing Ukraine for about an hour, probably taking questions. So a lot of intellectual deep dives into the situation. And on Saturday, I'll be speaking to Lori Spencer, the independent blogger and journalist. We'll be talking about Bobby Kennedy, the Kennedy assassination, and Trump in the upcoming presidential election. Much to talk about. And I hope everyone could join us, give us a sub, give us a like, and we'll be cross-pollinating sort of in this way with our communities.
V-O-T-U-E-M?
V-O-T-U-M-TV.
Okay. Votum TV.
Votum TV, right.
Oh, Votum TV. That's a very fertile ground there if you ever want me to come on your show. That's a very fertile ground for RFK Jr. because he registered, I mean, he entered the race as a Democrat. The Kennedy family is royalty in the Democrat Party. Bobby did not come out as an independent. He went in as his father's son, as a Democrat, which means he will, if Biden will have to face him. And he is easily Biden's superior when it comes to intelligence, when it comes to being the ability to debate. He's more friendly, he's outgoing, he's engaging, he's not scowling. Seems to me that, and we'll watch this develop, seems to me that someone high up in the Democrat Party does not want to lose power. And they think that Biden's going to lose it, that they're going to have to steal again. And maybe they're actually looking for, you know, kind of hedge that bet. Look, we'll help you with the steal. But if we have to do it for Biden, everyone in the world's going to know that we did it. So great, stay on that subject. I'd be very interested to hear what you guys hear across the pond about it, because you know the shenanigans that happened in 2020 here or 2016 here all originated in Ukraine, right? In Ukraine, made their way to the United Kingdom. And this is where Hillary was making the deal with Mike Steele, with the Steele dossier that didn't exist, and there was no wrongdoing there. So it's going to originate in your neck of the woods. I mean, you may hear about it long before we do.
Definitely. Indeed. Just by the way, Robert Kennedy Jr., as a young child, I think it was the first half of the 60s, actually visited the Yasnagora Shrine in Częstochowa with his father, Bobby Kennedy Sr. They had an informal private visit to Poland. They met with Blessed Cardinal Stefan Wyszyński. There's actually photos of it on the internet. It's pretty cool. I actually had a chance to talk to a Pauline father who was the guide for the Kennedys while they were doing their private visit at Yasnagora Monastery. So it was pretty epic. Bobby Kennedy Jr. saying a lot of good things, sending a lot of good signals, and he's basically a heretic right now in the Democratic Party. And the fact that the DNC already said that we're not going to be organizing debates because we already have an incumbent, well, pretty much tells you everything you need to know about the how scared they are of confronting Bobby Jr. in a debate stage.
Yeah, they don't want to. As I said, he's Biden's superior. Every issue, you know, Biden's a politician, Bobby's not. And Bobby says what you would expect someone. He's a Democrat Trump.
I would even say in many ways he's an old school Democrat in many ways.
Yeah, no, I agree. I completely agree. Hey, Mike, great to see you, buddy. Enjoy the leftovers.
Thank you. All right, take care.
All right, we'll see you soon. Thank you.
Have a good one, guys.
All right, brother. That's Mike Krupa, obviously live from Poland, and we are always blessed to have our international correspondents, and he's a good one. He's a really good. I like that conversation about Bobby Kennedy, about RFK Jr. Because as we have expressed here on the Mike Church Show, if you're wondering, we're a Democrat now, as I have said. During the Corona Doom, and even previous to the Corona Doom, I was following RFK Jr. and his children's health defense. We agree with RFK Jr. on a lot of issues, a lot of stuff that's important, especially when it comes to health. So the the idea that there's something that untoward. Look, he's right. The DNC and the Democrats are terrified of Biden being on the same stage, even in the same room with RFK Jr., which is why the state-run, fifth-estate Democrat media, whenever they get a chance to get a hold of him, are asking him the most stupid, I mean, the most, they're just, they're banal. They're just, the questions are designed to get him to trip up. They're looking for a 15-second faux pas that they can run on a little evening news shows is what they're doing. That's the gambit. So in any event, thanks to Mike Krupa, Votum TV.